This is the story. The Story of America. Today we bring you the story of how freedom of assembly was fought for and won in America.
In the year 1606, an English settlement in America was planned, one that would last. And even before it was made, a struggle had begun for its destiny. On one side was wily King James, come down from Scotland with notions of the divine right of kings. And on the other, Sir Edwin Sands, a believer in toleration and democratic ways. Now, let us hear the story of Virginia. Hear it from such a man as might have gone there as a colonist. A man we will call Richard Hazard.
We sailed in December of that year, 1606, but it was April before we sighted the land of Virginia. I remember still how we sailed into the great bay of the Chesapeake, and later how we rowed out from our ship one day toward the shore of the river. It seemed the fairest of all lands that day, and a fair land it was, but a hard one to tame. First we must cut the trees, then we must split and dress them to make our houses and our palisades to shut out the savages. And some also labored digging the soil and planting seeds. But the great heat of summer came now, and with it the sickness. Always more fell sick of this fever bred by the land. And the savages came down with hate in their small eyes and stole from us. But when we pursued them, they vanished among the trees, and our bullets hit only shadows. In the distance, we could hear their wild, taunting yells. There were 2 years of it, and no end in sight. I came to Virginia a youth with little thought of laws, or the rights of kings or parliaments. But as we starved and labored, the council that the king had put over us ruled with a heavy hand. They laid out our tasks for us, and took the fruit of them, and we had no voice in it. Then Captain Archer spoke up for us on the council. He tilted sharply with the leader of the four men that ruled us, whom I will not name.
This manner of government is against the spirit of the charter that brought us to this land. Is not the company a joint one? All members ruling and sharing together?
The king has set up the rule here, Master Archer. The sharing shall follow when we win safety and plenty.
That policy is a two-edged sword, sir, that has cut you already.
Speak plain words, Captain Archer.
I'll speak them plain enough to hurt. You bid men be slaves and labor for plenty. But slaves labor like slaves. Make these men free, and they'll work like free men, and double what they do.
What do you mean, make them free?
First, divide the lands as was promised. Give each man his own.
The time's not ripe for it.
Second, set up a parliament, and let all have a voice in a choice of rulers.
Oh, no.
Are you mad? Who are these men? None such elect to our parliament in England.
I will ask then, who does?
Why, the cities, the great landholders, as you know well.
We'll have it so here. Every man's in a township, and each is promised land. Give them land, and the cities and landholders shall vote.
This is treason to his majesty.
Yes.
No! Justice to Englishmen, that are now dealt with like dogs. Sir, these men grow angry.
The council has the power.
Has it?
Will you make a test?
Will you force one?
I stand on the king's order and on the terms of the charter we gave our company. Call up your rabble. The law will hold and you'll hang for it. Well?
I'll ask no man to lift his hand against your government. Although many would for the asking. But I'll change it.
A letter to King James, perhaps?
Look, you sir. I thought to persuade you to a fair way of government. But since you spurn it, I will speak to those who are your masters.
And who are they?
The gentlemen of the Virginia Company. If their charter is the cause of the miseries men suffer here, they should get a new and better one. And if I can work to a purpose, they shall.
Captain Gabriel Archer was a man who acted what he spoke. He went by ship to London and laid before Sir Edwin Sands the wretched state of the colony and the force of the tyrannical government. Yet it was no easy situation, as Sands knew.
Captain Archer, you asked the very thing I hoped greatly to plant in Virginia, was prevented by His Majesty.
So he would not be likely to grant a new charter, Sir Edwin.
And abandon the government that he himself framed? He's a stubborn man, and a king.
Aye, that's true.
To date, this planting of a colony in Virginia has gone ill. Half our colonists have died of the fevers, of poor diet, or by the savages. And we've found no gold.
Nor will we, Sir Edwin.
I believe you. Also, the envoy of the King of Spain makes great protest against the colony until our sovereign is desperate what to tell him.
A curse on the foreign rogue for that.
Amen. But we... No, we should rather bless this envoy.
What do you mean?
In a moment I'll make it clear. Man, I shall write a charter of liberties for your land of Virginia. And when I have whispered into the ear of Sir Francis Bacon, the King's counselor, it will be signed tomorrow.
Why, this new charter of Virginia is a most vile and democratic thing, Sir Francis. It would give this rascal Sands power to end the government that we ourselves framed for the colony.
That is true, my lord.
Take it away. I want no more of it.
Wait, my lord, King. Would you not end the troubles we have had with His Majesty of Spain over this same colony of Virginia?
Aye, we work toward war. Why, King Philip makes a great point of my part in the undertaking as if I have not a right to approve my own plantation.
That is the point, sir. This charter will cut the ground from beneath him there.
Are you mad, Sir Francis?
Nay, the soul of sanity and circumspection, my lord. If your majesty grants this new charter, it will take many powers from your hands and deposit these powers in the hands of the Virginia Company.
Aye, the thing I abominate and detest.
But, my lord King, consider. If these powers are no more yours, then the colony is chiefly a creature of the company's.
Uh-huh. Now I begin to see light in this affair.
Great and strong light, Your Majesty. For you can truly swear that you have yielded the rule and blamed the company for all faults.
But will that satisfy the Spanish envoy? He'll say that I should bend this company to my will.
And you, sire, can say that by English law you cannot. That the charter takes it out of your hands.
And does it?
Only, my liege, until you choose to revoke this same charter.
Good. Give me the pen. I'll sign this charter and let Sands have his liberties. But when it suits our royal purpose to do so, we'll take them back again.
And that was how Sir Edwin Sands got the charter for us. He knew the king signed it for policy alone, but he knew also that once Englishmen get liberty, they are slow to give them up. In Virginia, we heard the promise of those liberties and we took hope. And now a great new body of people came to settle with us. But the dividing up of lands and the establishing of liberties were still held off. And late one day, Captain Archer told me why.
First, these new people must be tried, till we see which of them are fit to stay here. And we must also find products for the colony that will enable each man to profit. This Indian corn, or maize, a few fish, sassafras roots, with such stuff we can't pay our way. But, Dick, there's a far greater danger than toil or poverty or sickness.
The savages.
Aye. They're alarmed because we bring these many new people in. They fear we'll push them off the land. A woman and three children were slain last night. I heard it not an hour ago.
But I thought that King Powhatan was friendly to us.
He has talk friendship, but he keeps 10 Englishmen prisoner. And he has many tools and weapons that his warriors have stolen from us.
His daughter Pocahontas has shown us love.
Aye. She saved the life of Captain John Smith. And she's learned our language and softened her father toward us. If all the savages were like her, we might soon make them Christians and dwell peaceably with them.
But now things look dark.
There may be a remedy. Through this same Pocahontas.
Through her?
Aye. The governor had word last night that she was visiting in a certain Indian village near the water. He sent a ship to the place.
Will he seize her?
They have a plan to lure her onto the ship. Then they will cast off and bring her here to Jamestown. In fact, the ship should arrive any moment now. Master John Rolfe, who knows Pocahontas somewhat, will seek to persuade her to help us.
Listen, that must be it.
It is, with the princess. That was the signal. Now we shall see if this rough action brings good or stirs up greater dangers.
No, Master Rolfe. None of your people have done me an injury, but to be brought here by force, that has hurt in my heart.
But, madam, we hold you only until your father sends us the English prisoners he has and our own goods. Is that not just, madam?
Perhaps. Yes, I think it is just.
Then tell your father so by the next messenger. Thus will you help to make peace between our peoples.
That I should like. To have peace between your people and mine.
Then you will do it, madam.
Do you not know the name the English call me?
Of course, it is Pocahontas.
And in your country, this madam, is it for a woman who is married?
Why, yes, and for one we respect.
Oh? Could you call me Pocahontas? And also respect me?
Why, of course.
I would like it. Because here, you, more than the others, are my friend.
I am glad, Pocahontas.
Then I am glad too, John. I have looked at your book, your Bible, but I cannot read it well.
I was surprised you could read it at all.
A little I learned from the English boy that stayed with my father to learn our language. Always I have had a great wish to read this book and learn of the great English God.
Well, then you shall. I'll beg the minister himself to teach you.
I do not think I would learn well from this minister.
No? Why?
Because he is a stern man. Do you not read this book?
Why, yes, I read it daily.
Then perhaps you would teach me. Because of the English people, you most of all are my friend.
That was how it went with Master John Rolfe and Pocahontas. And in time it came to pass that both knew they loved each other. And Master Rolfe feared that to love a woman of a strange race might be a sin. But God showed him otherwise, as he wrote the governor.
Thus, when I thought I was at peace at last, behold, another but more gracious temptation made breaches into my holiest meditations, pulling me by the ear and crying, "Why dost thou not endeavor to make her a Christian?" And this has happened to my great wonder, even when she hath been farthest separated from me, which in common reason might breed forgetfulness of a far more worthy creature. What should I do? Refuse to lead the blind into the right way?
Thus Master Rolfe laid his case before the governor, who approved marriage between him and Pocahontas. And King Powhatan liked it, and the marriage was made. And then there ceased to be trouble between us and the savages. For through this marriage, we were joined in friendship together. And it was Master John Rolfe that brought a second blessing to our colony besides peace. I first learned of this when one day he led me to a little shed behind his house. As we came through the door, I smelled the sweet tobacco plant that the Indians had taught us to use.
I see that your nose tells you what is in this shed, Master Housing. It is here I've cured my tobacco.
Your tobacco?
Yes, I've planted it as men plant corn and cultivated it. A few laughed at me and have forgot that I did this. Well, last year's crop hangs here now. The sweetest and strongest tobacco grown in any land.
You think so?
I know it. I've tried many kinds. Master Hazard, men use this weed in England freely. And from this year forward, they will ask for tobacco of Virginia. and pay well for it.
And in a short time this was so, and we planted much tobacco and profited from it. And now we got a division of land so that men had their own. But we wanted more than land.
When are these harsh laws to be cast aside, and we to make our own as the charter permits?
Shall one man govern us, and obeying a company across the sea?
It is we who need know the needs of the land, for we have suffered much and done much here.
Aye, did they of London pacify the savages?
Or discover the value of tobacco?
Or become half-starved for want of corn?
Or wear out with a fever?
Or ride the land when it was like an unbroken horse, until it was tamed?
So we called for our own government. And at length, Sir Edwin Sands, who had long planned it, sent a new governor. And with him came a secretary who had sat in the Parliament of England, a Master John Parry. And he read the governor's proclamation.
In order that the freemen of Virginia may have a hand together with the governor and council in the ordering of their own affairs, it is granted that a general assembly shall be held yearly. And this assembly shall consist of a governor and his council and of a house of burgesses. Two burgesses being elected from each plantation or town by the inhabitants thereof. And this assembly shall have power to make all laws thought good and profitable.
Then came the election. We stood forth, each man of us, and declared our choice.
Your attention, gentlemen. Master Edward Hamish.
I vote for Captain William Powell and Ensign William Spence.
Master Richard Hazard.
Ensign Spence and Master Thomas Vincent.
Master Cedric Jones.
Captain Powell and Ensign Spence.
Master John Pauley. I call Master John Pauley.
It was a strange thing to stand forth Master and choose Paul. One to make laws for you to obey. Few of us had done that or seen it done. And we heard that in London the king did not like it. Aye, we heard a tale of great rage in his palace. When the news of our assembly came to him.
What mockery of government is made in Virginia? An assembly elected by the people. A saucy, brawling, unbridled gathering full of naughtiness.
True, my sovereign lord, true.
It will bring a speedy destruction of all true government. It is a blot on our reign and realm.
Wisely spoken, my lord king, most wisely.
I'll root it out! I'll tear their charter of government as it were a penny ballot sheet. Watch these democratical rogues. At the first ill step, we shall take back what we gave, and King's government shall be a phoenix rising from the ashes of this dangerous freedom.
So the king ranted. Yet we in Virginia thought well of our assembly. The laws it made were not great laws, but we used them. They were framed by men who must themselves obey them. They met our needs, and we were resolved to keep them. The times seemed fair to us then. Master Roth and I sat late one evening over our pipes of tobacco and our drink, and spoke of what we enjoyed.
10 years ago, Dick, it was wilderness.
Aye, with only forest and a few fields the savages had planted.
And now there are miles of farmland and Christian men by the thousand in our own government and laws.
And we prosper, and there is peace with the savages.
I pray it may prove a long peace.
They come among us freely.
Too freely, it may be.
Could it be so? They're well behaved. They work with us.
Listen, a bell. Some village northward. What is the shouting? Comes closer.
Master Ralph, awake! Seize your musket.
What is it?
Why are we coming? Have risen. Men and women and babies have been murdered.
Where? When?
Even now, everywhere. A score of dwellings have been fired. They swarm like 10,000.
Quick, get your weapons, Dick. I'll meet you at the fort. Every man will be needed. This is life or death for all of us.
It was life for most of us in the end, but hundreds perished. The savages had lulled us into security, then struck to wipe us out. And although they failed in their purpose, they did us other ill besides wounding and slaying. For when the news reached London, King James exulted in it.
The looseness of this popular government caused this great mischief. Here in London, they of the Virginia Company quarrel among themselves, and in the plantations they invite the savages to do murder on them. Let us demand an accounting of these men and look toward restoring a government that is firm and royal.
That was the king's purpose. He could not carry it out quickly, and we heard many rumors of what he would do. But at length, a commission of four men arrived in Virginia. Among them was the same John Parry, who had been secretary to our first assembly. And he stood up in the church and read certain orders.
By order of the Lords of the Privy Council, the Virginia Company has been commanded to surrender their charter so that His Majesty may resume direct rule of the colony. And by order, the present form of government shall be changed, and the rule shall be by a governor and certain assistants appointed by His Majesty.
There was silence when these orders were read, and as the commissioners filed out of the church afterwards, Master Parry spoke to the governor, Sir Francis Wyatt, who stood by the door.
Do you go to your office, Sir Francis?
No, Master Parry. I remain here. We shall confer among ourselves about these orders.
To profess your liking of them, I trust.
To take our own counsel about them.
I will remind you that too much conferring and counseling caused the issuance of these orders.
And I will remind you that you assisted us to begin that conferring and counseling. You took part in it and praised it. And though your mind has been changed, ours are more constant. We in Virginia esteem highly the right to speak and act together, and we shall seek to preserve it.
Our assembly met and voted to take no account of the commissioners, but to speak directly to the king and his ministers in London, and they made certain petitions.
We humbly desire that the governor sent over here may not have absolute authority.
We desire that the governor must have the consent of his council for his act.
But above all, we humbly entreat that we may retain the liberty of our general assembly, than which nothing can more conduce to our satisfaction or to the public utility. We send these entreaties by messenger and await the ship that brings your gracious reply to them.
And time passed, and after many months, the day came when our ship returned, and cannon and bells greeted her. And we waited while our governor went aboard the ship. And when he appeared on the deck later to speak to us, we cheered loudly.
There is news! There is news of grave but sad importance for all men in Virginia. His Majesty King James is no more. His Majesty Charles I reigns in England and Virginia.
God bless His new Majesty!
Long live the king!
Long live the king!
Then, as the governor came off the ship and made his way through us toward his house, Master Ralph spoke to him.
Your Excellency, Lord Governor.
Yes, Master Ralph.
What of the Assembly? What of the House of Burgesses?
Aye, sir. What says His New Majesty of that?
He has spoken no word against it, my friend.
What will be done?
There will be an Assembly.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
For the good of the colony, I will do what best serves the colony.
Are you
our freedoms have been established by doing three acts. Our assembly was granted by law, and we have sanctioned it by use. With time, no man can take it from us. And who knows, in the vastness of this new land, what flowering will come of people's parliaments from this first seed that was sown here by us.
You have just heard The House of Burgesses, the story of how freedom of assembly was fought for and won in America, brought to you by This Is the Story. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.